Stacy, thank you so much for coming on our podcast. I really appreciate it. Very excited to have you on Across the Dietary Universe. Thanks so much for being here.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here and talk to you.
So I have a quick intro for you. So Stacy Roberts has been a registered dietitian for more than a decade, and she helps patients going through or recovering from cancer treatments improve their strength, energy, and gut health with targeted nutrition. She is a proponent of plant-focused nutrition and eating real food. Stacy, tell me about this pizza award that you received, because that's the one thing that I noticed right away, that we can get into the more serious topics later. But this is obviously important enough of an achievement that you put it on the homepage of your website.
Yeah. So when I was a kid, I figured I don't want to be boring. I'm not a boring person. So on my website, I put like 10 stupid things that you wouldn't know about me.
Right.
So one of them is that I won in camp that I ate the most pizza that day. I ate 6 slices of pizza.
That's amazing.
So yes.
At 5, that's like 50% of your body weight, maybe. That's quite the achievement.
It was a lot. And that, you know what? Now that I have a child, he could eat pizza too. Like, I mean, I'm from New York.
That's
you know,
New York
pizza
genes.
Is like the thing. Yes. But with pizza too, like nutritionally, when you have no toppings on it, all you're eating is bread and cheese. So it's not that filling.
Yeah. So I was going to ask, how are your feelings now about pizza?
I love pizza, okay. But I can only get good New York pizza in New York, not in South Florida.
So can you end the debate? Is pizza good for you or not?
It can be. Why not? I hate like talking about foods you shouldn't eat and foods that are bad for you, because there's no foods that, you know what? Everything in somewhat of a moderation. I mean, I hate using moderation too, but if you're having a slice of pizza and you're adding vegetables to it, you have a salad with it, what's wrong with that? I mean, you're getting all your food groups in.
Right, right. Stacy, I like you. I think we're going to get along.
Yes. I'm a real person, real food, like honestly.
Right. How did you get into nutrition? I've spoken to a lot of dietitians. I've spoken to a lot of nutritionists. You're the first that I've spoken to with a specialization in helping cancer patients, which I think, you know, at this point, unfortunately, like cancer just touches everyone. So I think a lot of our listeners are going to want to know about this. But how did you end up taking this journey? And walk me through that a little bit. Get some background here.
Yeah, so when I was a kid, this is how it all started with nutrition. When I was probably 13 years old, my grandmother told me that if you eat pasta, you'll lose weight. So the American that I am, you got to take it full force. And for basically 2 years, that's all I ate was pasta. And I drank Crystal Light iced tea. So my mom would yell at me and tell me that I need to eat fruits and vegetables and meat, but I rarely did. My diet was pasta. And then when I turned 16 years old, we started noticing that my hair was falling out. Like my hair was getting very thin. And the good mother that I have, she took me to every doctor to figure out what was wrong with me. Like, why am I 16 years old losing my hair? Like, what is going on? And I remember going to one doctor, an endocrinologist, and he told me, basically, I have female pattern baldness and I better get used to it. And that's it. My mom even took me to a place to get a wig. And it was just awful. Until we went to an alternative medicine doctor. And I just remember sitting in her office and the first thing she said to me was, what do you eat? Like, what's your diet like? And when I told her, I mean, now it makes total sense. Like, I don't understand.
Yeah.
Like, why you didn't know that from the beginning? But she's like, basically, you're malnourished. She goes, you're not eating any fruits and vegetables. All you're eating is pasta and, you know, Crystal Light iced tea. So we changed my diet. And at that moment, I really realized that what you put in your body affects everything. And I was also, after every meal, I was doubled over in pain. And I just remember crying that I was in so much pain after I ate, and I got sick. Not to get, you know, anyone, if anyone would have met me, they would have thought I was bulimic because I was going to the bathroom throwing up after every meal. But it ended up being that I formed allergies to food. So I have allergies to your uncommon foods like steak and salmon and snapper. I get sick from it. My body can't tolerate it. So I really learned at 16 that what you eat, that you put in your body really affects everything about you. It affects your mood. It affects your hair, your skin, your nails. So that's what really got me into nutrition. I went to school for it, and then I was looking for a job. I was working in a nursing home, and when I applied for the job at a hospital, she said, you're going to be on the oncology floor. And as I naive as I was, I didn't know what oncology was. I'm like, okay, well, let me go look it up. Right. So I had to Google it. I'm like, really, cancer? Like, what am I going to do with nutrition with cancer? Like, my perception of cancer is not good. Like, you have cancer, like, just eat what you want. Like, it doesn't matter. It, you know?
Yeah.
But I really realized that it does matter what you eat before, after, during treatment. It can affect your treatment. It can affect radiation. It can affect chemo. So I took the job at the cancer center, at the hospital, got a job at a cancer center, and I fell in love. I just knew that this is where I was supposed to be because I work with clients who really want to make changes in their life. I mean, this is unfortunately, it's a life-threatening disease. So they want to do whatever's possible to help live longer or prevent the side effects from the treatment or help deal with the treatment instead of taking meds. Because you see some of these patients with 20 pages of medications that they're on. So trying to help with diet to help prevent taking more medications, which cause more side effects. And, you know, it's a whole vicious cycle. So that's why I started my own practice to work with people with cancer.
Good for you. Lovely story. Very unfortunate diet at the beginning, but I'm happy that that's changed. are you Italian? Is that your background? Just pasta?
No.
Okay, because I thought maybe like that was the tradition or that was just the yummies.
No, my grandma was just into weight loss. Like she used to, where she used to live, she used to teach nutrition classes. And now looking, she was into the pasta. She was into the artificial sweeteners. And even I got all the recipes of what she makes. And I'm like, oh my God, it's all fake stuff. Like all the artificial stuff. So...
Oh no. Yeah. Well, you got out of it. You found a solution in some way, shape or form. When we're 16, we're all figuring something out. And so for you was diet, and for others it might be something else, but you're here now, and you got assigned to the oncology floor, and you didn't leave because I guess you fell in love with that specific niche.
Yes, I did. You know, I try to go other places, but it always pulls me back because I do love, I just love the clientele. I love their look on life now. You know, I've changed my look. You know, the little things don't bother me anymore. Like, who cares if there's something on the floor? There are bigger fish to fry. There are bigger things to be upset about.
Amen.
So I really love what I do.
What are you focused on improving in a cancer patient? And I guess cancer patient is still too vague of a term anyways. Yeah. Because there's so many parts to the cancer journey for a patient. And you did talk about the before, during, and after. So I guess one part of the question is, where do you focus your attention on the most? And obviously, I guess the knee-jerk answer, I would think, is preventative measures. But it sounds like your clients are... I mean, if it was preventative, you wouldn't be dealing with the cancer patients. You'd be dealing with anyone. And then the second part of the question is... I would think that you're probably focused on helping like their energy levels as they're going through treatment through food. But maybe elaborate on those two points.
Yeah. So with them, a lot of them are going through treatment and chemo is not fun to go through and they have a lot of side effects. So that's one part that I deal with of working with people when they're feeling fatigued or having the nausea, having the vomiting, you know, having the taste changes, everything tastes like metal, everything tastes like poop, things don't taste the same. So I work with clients in that extent. And with me, I work with where the client is. So even after treatment, we want to eat healthy, all of us, even no cancer. Like, we want to eat healthy, put more nourishing food in our body. You know, one example I like is we take care of our car, you know, we put good fuel in our car, we take it for oil changes, like we really take care of it so it lasts a lot longer. We need to do the same thing with us. We need to take care of our bodies because we only get one. And we want to put good food into our body. Would we put dirt in our car to make it run? No, because it's not going to work. So the same thing with us. So it's taking small little steps to improve our diet. None of us are perfect. I'm not perfect. I don't claim to be perfect. I don't eat a perfect diet, you know, but it's just taking those small little steps to eat better, to get more energy. I think fatigue is one of the biggest side effects I hear from everyone with radiation, with chemo. They're just tired. It pulls all their energy out. So eating healthy will help give them more energy, and exercising. I know they hate when I say that, but exercising too helps with fatigue. Laying on the couch, yes, I get it. When I'm not feeling well, it's so much easier to lay on the couch and watch movies.
Yeah.
But it gets us more tired, you know? So it's not helping with the fatigue. It actually makes it worse. So getting up, moving, finding what you enjoy doing, and, you know, working on that. But yeah,
do you work with them as a coach and accountability as well? Because I imagine, like, you finish radiation, you finish chemo, it's like the discipline to go out and do that. I mean, for a person who's perfectly healthy, it's tough. So for someone who's sick, and I haven't, you know, knock on wood, I haven't had to deal with that, but, you know, I have a chronic illness that I deal with. And when that gets flared up, like, I don't want to move, even if I know that might help me. So how do you sort of help them stay on track?
Yeah, it's being their accountability partner that they need to check in with me. I'm going to slap the whip on them, check in on them just to make sure, even if it is, you know, getting off the couch for 5 minutes and walking, even if it's marching in place, it's better than doing nothing at all. Even with eating, if you eat no vegetables, no fruit, you know, I'm happy if you eat one a day. Like, hey, let's start with that. And the small little changes that people make there, when you set small realistic goals for yourself that you could attain, you're more likely to stick with it. And you're like, wow, I could do this. And you start building on it versus setting up unrealistic goals for yourself. So it's like, okay, I want to go on the elliptical for 45 minutes, and you get on the elliptical, and after 5 minutes, you're winded, which is understandable. But if you set that goal for yourself to only do 4 minutes and you do five, you're like, wow, that's a great, you know, I did it. It wasn't too bad. Now you could push yourself, well, now let's go to 6 minutes versus setting yourself up for failure. So working with a dietitian will help you set those small realistic goals for yourself so you're able to, you know, reach them. And it's not just about weight. I hate focusing on weight. It's focusing on how you feel and what gives you energy and what makes you happy. Like, if all you want to do is, you know, wake up in the morning and not feel tired, you know, you want to work with where the client is and what their goals are. It's not me, you know, I could set any goals for you, but it's what you want and you're willing to obtain it.
Right. And I imagine, aside from energy, there's also a real effort to optimize and improve their immune system to help in the battles that they face. So how do you go about doing that? How does food improve the immune system?
Yeah, our immune system is a funky, you know, there's just so much to it. But the more nutrients we eat, the more fruits and vegetables we eat, the better we work. The more, you know, saturated fats and salt and sugar we eat, our body is just run down. So it's working with the clients at that time. And you know what? Just think about when you're not feeling well. Sometimes your comfort food is not healthy things. If it is toast or pasta or mac and cheese, it's finding ways to take those comfort foods and make them healthier so they're not feeling like they're being deprived. But my biggest thing is trying to increase the fruits and the vegetables and all these vitamins and minerals that we need in our diet to help with the immune system, because that's what helps fight infection. And sometimes when you're going through treatment, your immune system goes down. So you're not able to fight infection like you can before. So some doctors are telling patients, well, you can't eat raw fruits and vegetables. So, which you still can, it's not true, but you want to make sure everything is washed and cleaned really well before you eat it, because if there is any bacteria on it, right, you don't want to get sick. But you need those vitamins and minerals to help you going and give you the energy and fight, give you the immune system that you need.
What do you say to, and I'm going to deviate off the path of the conversation just for a second, but what do you say to people who are on like a carnivore diet and they're not eating the fruits and vegetables, and they say, I'm eating meat and I feel great. I'm not a proponent of it. I don't really like the idea of it, but for some people they're like, oh my God, this is amazing and I feel great. Placebo or what?
I mean, for everyone is different. Your body's different than my body. We're all different. I think you need to look at different levels too, that look at their blood levels, see what's really going on, see what their weight is. But I do try to, even if you are a carnivore, my husband is, he likes his meat and potatoes, and it's trying to sneak in the fruits and vegetables into him. And finding ways to do that. But yeah, eating too much meat, it's so much saturated fats and, you know, animal product that it's not really that good. I mean, yeah, once in a while, it's fine if you wanted to do more of your natural meats, if it's your grass-fed beef or your organic chicken, at least it's a little bit better for you.
Right.
But yeah.
So, okay, cool. Thank you for answering that. And I guess that is the answer that I should have expected, which is everyone is different, but probably get your veggies and fruits in. Cancer treatments cause GI issues, which I wasn't really aware. I guess you don't know these things until you go through them. So as I guess part of your role is to help mitigate the GI issues that come with the treatments. It sounds like you have your hands full. How are you? Are you like assigning or prescribing probiotics, or how do you combat the GI issues? Because that's a whole other beast.
That is such a beast. And every, you know, with probiotics too, you need to be careful with them, especially with supplements, with any supplements. You just really want to make sure you're getting them from a quality company that's being third party tested, just because any supplement, they could say what they want on the label and they don't check it until someone's complaining about it. But let's just take vitamin C, for example. If you're taking vitamin C pills and now you're having stomach pains, you're not going to blame the vitamin C pill on it. You're going to say, I ate something, or, you know, you're not going to call the FDA and complain about it. So you really want to make sure you're getting a quality supplement that is third party tested, that you're getting actually what they're saying it is. So if it's saying it's 1,000 milligram of vitamin C, you want to make sure that's what you're really getting and not 10,000 or not nothing in it. Same thing with probiotics. You want to make sure that they're live, because it's a live animal. It's a live creature. You want to make sure that you have a live of it. And you don't want to do it while you're getting treatment, but there are foods too that have probiotics in it. So like your kefir, your yogurts, your kombucha, and you want to have probiotics with a prebiotic, because the prebiotics feed your probiotics, because since they're a live organism, they need to eat too, and you want them to live. So we really need to take care of our gut, because the gut talks to our brain and our brain controls our gut too. So it's really making sure that the gut is healthy. And when you are going through treatment, it's killing everything. Like chemo kills things in your body. Radiation kills everything. And you're on all different medications. So we really want to have our good probiotics in our system, so our system is running properly.
Yeah, no, that's super important to keep in mind. And I think the gut as a whole, the cancer treatments will cause GI issues, but the GI issues can also lead to cancer too. Like I have ulcerative colitis, and you know, the probability of getting, you know, colon cancer is now significantly higher because of that. So I have to really make sure, but a lot of people aren't diagnosed with UC. They're not diagnosed with Crohn's. They're not diagnosed with a GI issue. Yet they have, like, most people you talk to have some sort of IBS. And we just take it for granted, like, oh, I ate a pizza, or oh, I ate too much dairy, or oh, I did this or that, and that was stupid, and they feel bad, or they drank too much or whatever. We just take it like that is normal. But really, really, that's a yellow flag, and we should be taking precautions before it's too late.
Yep, and finding doctors that listen to you, too, because I have a lot of people, too, who where the doctor tells them, oh, you're just stressed. Like, that's the reason you're having diarrhea. You need to calm down, which, yes, I know stress, too, could increase it, but you need to look at the patient and see what's going on with them. And I just feel like it is underdiagnosed, and they make excuses of other reasons that it could be,
right,
versus really digging in and finding, like, the diagnosis.
Do you prescribe, I guess you must prescribe, like, vitamin supplements and things like that if necessary?
Sometimes. It depends on the person. Yeah, I can make recommendations on, you know, what vitamins to take, but everyone's different. Like, when you see online, oh, everyone should take omega-3s and probiotics and multivitamins. I mean, you have to look at the person, too, and see what their diet's like. I mean, if it is a really good diet, they might not need a multivitamin. Or if they're eating a lot of yogurt and probiotics, it might not be necessary to take a prebiotic.
How do you
go
about...
sometimes it does come in.
How do you go about doing an analysis? Can you just go and run a blood test, or do you have to connect with a dietitian, then you have the right protocols to make that assessment? Because some people don't know where they are. It's like, well, yeah, should I take it or shouldn't I?
Yeah, I think going to your doctor, getting a full workup of your labs is a good first start, just to see where everything is. I think everyone should know what their vitamin D level is. Mm. I think that's an important one to know. But just know what your labs are, and knowing, you know, I mean, we have to talk about it, but your poop, you have to look at your poop and see what it looks like, what color it is, what shape is it, how often are you going? Because that's a good indication, too, of what's going on in the body.
Yeah.
Of
people,
you know,
have to be honest about their poop. There needs to be a
poop. I talk poop all the time.
There needs to be a poop awareness month, I feel.
I do post about poop, and I did one about what candies look like certain poop. And someone wrote me, they're like, oh my God, I'm not going to be able to look at, you know, a Snickers bar anymore because you said. But it's true. Like, all poop, it's a real thing, but you have to know what it looks like.
Yeah. Okay. Wait. Speaking of candies, this is another debate that I have that I have with myself and with my girlfriend. But supplement gummies. Is this a scam? Are we just having candy? Or is that...
I mean, there's a lot of sugar in some of those. You might as well.
Is the net benefit, like, nil because you're getting vitamins, but then you're getting the sugar as well?
You're getting a ton of sugar from those...
Oh, no.
Those gummy candies. And
oh, no.
Just pop a pill.
I know. Okay, what about the chewable pills then? What about the chewable pills? Because they also are kind of sweet.
I mean, they might have some sugar in it, but...
it's not as bad.
The gummies usually help more.
We got into a habit of, like, all the supplements that we take as gummies. So that's probably not a good idea.
I know, my mom used to take the calcium in those chocolate chews.
Uh-huh.
Or it was vitamin D, one of them. But she was like, oh, I'm eating them all day. I'm like, but mom, that's not what you're supposed to do. It's not your fix for chocolate.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, they know at the office here.
They try to trick you.
Yeah. I definitely take, I think the recommended number of gummies of vitamin D per day is like one or two. And I frequently eat like six of them per day. I just have some as like a snack. So I guess I'll stop. I'll make an early resolution now to stop that.
Yes. not so many.
Yeah, probably not. Why aren't cancer patients given enough nutritional support? Many people don't receive nutritional support as part of their cancer treatments. Why is that? Is it just an archaic system? Is it not valued enough? Why isn't there a Stacy with every cancer patient?
See, that's why I started my nutrition program, to, like, give nutrition to everyone who's going through cancer treatment, because I feel it's so important. I feel that doctors, they're not educated about nutrition. I think they take one nutrition class and then they think they could give nutrition advice, which sometimes is not accurate and very false. But I do, I feel like, I think too, it has to do with the hospitals and the cancer centers, because some dietitians, they don't charge for their services. Mm-hmm. So it is a cost to the cancer center. So they're not making money from it. So I don't know if that's a reason, but I do think it's so important, because you have so many people with the side effects of the nausea, the vomiting, the diarrhea, you know, all that fun stuff. Nurses don't have time to do it. They don't have the education to do it. I wish I would shout it from the rooftops. I think every cancer center should have a dietitian.
Yeah.
And if they do, sometimes it's not enough, you know?
Yeah.
There's only two and a half. At the cancer center I work at, there's 2.5 of us. You know, I'm only a part-time employee. And we're overwhelmed. We have so many consults and screens for patients. And I think patients need to be educated, too, of how a dietitian can be helpful. Because a lot of the thought process is, just like I had, well, it doesn't matter, I have cancer, so I'm just going to eat what I want. That's what the doctor told me. Which, you know what, fine. If the doctor told you to eat what you want, but there are foods that can help if you are having diarrhea, and there are foods you should avoid if you're having diarrhea, or foods to help with the nausea.
Yeah.
So I think they need to be educated too. And they're, you know, when you get diagnosed, you're just so overwhelmed with all of the appointments and, you know, setups and everything, that even when I do call, oh, well, no, not yet. I'm not ready. You know, it's just, they're overwhelmed.
Yeah, no, that's definitely part of the journey. Yeah, no, you're totally right. Unfortunately, I think, well, there's the fortunate part is that despite nutrition lagging, I think, for quite a while, like, you see way more dietitians now, you see way more nutritionists at the forefront. And I think social media is a big part of that, because people are seeing for themselves you know, what they're missing out on that they're not hearing from their doctors. And it's just false where you go to, like, I go to a GI and look, as far as the actual technical medical GI treatments, they're amazing. They're really good. But then when I say, you know, I felt a lot better taking a ginger supplement, or I felt a lot better, you know, taking turmeric and avoiding dairy. And they're like, well, that's great for you, but, you know, we can't comment on that. And it's like, it just, why? It doesn't really make too much sense. And so I'm hoping that this is now, with social media, with these conversations that people are listening to, eventually we'll see that come to the forefront. But, you know, we're quite new. Sometimes we like to believe that we've been here for like 100,000 years, but, you know, we've only had the internet for what, like 30 years at this point, 40 years. So it's like,
yeah, but I think social media has helped and has hurt too, because you have anybody want to say they're a nutritionist or whatever they are, and give nutrition information, and they put fear in people saying, oh, well, if you have cancer, you shouldn't be eating sugar, you shouldn't be having soy, you shouldn't be eating this, don't eat that. And it puts fear in people, and people then have the list of foods that they think they shouldn't be eating.
Right.
And they're scared to eat because they, you know, they don't want the cancer to come back. So they're scared to eat anything, because they think that one food is going to make it come back. So it's really trying to get to the professionals who will give you accurate information.
What's the issue
working with them?
What's the issue with, and I want to get into some of the myth busting, but what's the issue with soy and breast cancer? Because breast cancer, I guess, is a hormonal type of cancer. Is that right, related at all? Is that just like a myth over the years? Or is it different for everyone?
It is a myth. Yeah, it's different for everyone. And it's the amount of soy that you're eating. the recommended amount is about 2 to 3 servings of soy. So if you don't eat soy to begin with, it's okay. Like, you don't need to start. But when you look at the studies in China, I mean, those people eat soy all the time and they have low risks of breast cancer. A lot of doctors tell patients, oh, don't eat soy because it has an estrogen effect in the body. But if they're not eating that much soy, it doesn't matter. But when they read the food labels and they see like soybean oil or, you know, all these other processed soys where it's not going to give an estrogen effect in the body, you have to eat so much of it to give it an estrogen effect. So it's okay to have, but they're scared to have it. But most people, I can't say a lot of them don't even eat tofu or edamame or any of that anyway. So it's not a big deal. I mean, some people like the edamame, or you're vegans who like the tofu. But it's okay to have, but there's just such a fear over it.
Yeah. Do you have any other crazy claims or myths that you want to bust while we're on here?
Sugar.
Oh, the sugar one. Okay. Okay. Tell me about sugar.
Sugar. I mean, so the theory is that sugar feeds your cancer. But because they say, you know, when you go for your tests and you drink the sugar, it lights up your cancer. So they see where it is. But if you're eating sugar, it feeds all of your cells. So it just doesn't go to your cancer cells. So does it feed your cancer cells? Sure. But it feeds all of your cells. But we, like we were talking about before, about eating more fruits and vegetables, we want to eat foods that give us a nutritional benefit. So our cookies, cakes, candies, are they good for us anyway? No, we shouldn't be eating them. But it's okay to have, if you have a bite of a cookie, like if that's what you're craving, have a cookie, because you're going to think about it, want it, and then you're going to give into it. But eating one food, if it was soy or if it was sugar or a cookie, it's not going to make the cancer come back. That one food, one time, is not going to trigger, you know, an effect. It's a long history of it. You know, the issue comes in with sugar is our weight. You know, the more weight we have, the more fat we have in our body, the more estrogen it can produce. And that's when you're at risk for having reoccurrence or having, you know, the cancer, because the estrogen revs up the tumor. So we really want to get our weight and into our ideal body weight range. That should be the biggest concern, not eating a cookie once, you know?
Yeah.
And people are scared to eat fruit. I'm like, you know what? But I don't have patients who are telling me that they're 300 pounds because they eat too much fruit. That's not usually the issue, you know?
That's not the case typically. There might be some anomaly. No. There's always an anomaly. That would be funny to see. I want to know what you have to say for to the vegans, because you promote eating plants, but you know, a totally vegan thing is not your brand. And so why is that? Why haven't you, you know, maybe there's some people who message you like, hey, just go fully vegan, and then you know, all of your problems will be solved.
I mean, going completely vegan, if you want to and you can, I mean, that's up to you. But a lot of people who are vegan aren't eating, some people, not all, but some of them follow a vegan diet, but they're not eating healthy because they don't like tofu, they don't like tempeh, they don't know how to get protein from their vegan diet. So what are they eating? Pasta, rice. They're focusing on the carbs because they don't know what foods have protein in it, plant-based protein.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I've talked to a lot of people who are like, oh, yeah, I'm vegan. And when I talk to them, I'm like, okay, well, where do you get your protein from? And, like, I stump them. Like, they can't answer because they don't know. So it can be done healthfully. I mean, there are some vegans who, you know, they eat healthy. It's great. It's not for everyone, because to sit here and tell you can't have butter anymore, no meat, no fish, you know, no honey, that's a lot to take away from someone. But if you slowly decrease it to eat more plant-based, you know, I think that's the way to go. It's more realistic for people.
Yeah. Yeah. No, there's definitely, and there's been a huge rise in mainstream vegan items, mainstream plant-based items. And look, I love a plant-based, like, Beyond Burger. I think they're delicious. I don't really eat red meat. I like red meat, but my gut doesn't really like it. But my gut isn't also crazy about the Beyond Meat either. So, you know, you're getting some of these foods, and they're kind of hard to parse what is plant-based healthy versus plant-based unhealthy. And there's a lot of dissecting and analysis that needs to be done on the consumer side. And I just wonder why, and that's part of the reason why we started Honeycomb, is, you know, just to add some transparency, add some layer of accountability to the food that we're producing. If you think about even going to a restaurant, a lot of times the food is made to taste good, not to make you feel good. And that it's just kind of like a catch-22 as a consumer, where like you don't really have a clear course of action. And I'm very curious. Part of this podcast is just talking about the future of how this is all going to develop. And what we discuss here today, we have a ton of problems. We have this problem and that problem and that problem. And you're coming up with a solution and you're doing your best, but Stacey's aren't scalable. To every market and to every part of the consumer buying cycle. But how do you see, do you have an optimistic view of the future of how people eat and how it relates to their body? Or are you more on the pessimistic side and we need to just go to Mars?
You know what? I think it's partly the parents, because not to blame the parents, but we eat the way we were raised. So like, I eat the way my parents raised me, and I'm teaching my son how to eat. And even when I send him to school, teachers are floored about what he's eating, because I don't give him mac and cheese. I mean, he eats it, but that's not like a staple in his diet. He's never had a chicken nugget. Just because he knows what real food is. And now they're making all these fake foods of the vegan nuggets and the vegan burgers. But when you read the ingredients in it, I mean, it's back to basic. Like, you can't pronounce the words. We don't know what it is. It's all fake chemicals that we're putting into our body. I'd rather someone eat a mushroom and make a mushroom burger and eat that versus trying to make a burger out of whatever to taste like a real hamburger. Like, it's just weird. It's yeah. It's scary what they're doing to the food. But if we stick with real foods and make things, if it is a bean burger or a burger made out of whole grains, at least it's real food versus all this processed stuff. I mean, even when you're reading the labels of it, it has so much salt in it and chemicals in it. Yeah. It's not real food anymore. I mean, can you even consider it food? I don't even know.
Yeah, I mean, the other side of it is, you know, some of these, they taste great, but tasting great isn't always, you know, it's typically not the measurement for a one-to-one with feeling great. And that's where the issues come in. And maybe and the other side of it too is that you might feel okay, but then what are the consequences of that over, you know, a long period of time? Right. It's scary. I want you to, if you can, if you'd like to, share maybe like a positive, success story that you've had, maybe a positive outcome with one of your, clients that, you know, maybe went from point A to point B and people can get inspired by that.
Yeah, no, I have a client that I've been working with, and she's trying to lose weight, and she likes to drink, and she would have her wine and her vodka and all of that stuff. But we never cut that out of her diet. Like, we let that go. But we were talking about increasing her fruits and vegetables and eating more, because she wasn't eating breakfast. She would eat lunch and dinner, and that was really it. And she was working out and didn't know why she was losing weight. So working together, and she started eating more. She started eating a breakfast in the morning, just something little right before she worked out, and started eating more fruits and vegetables. She realized, oh my goodness, like, I'm eating more and I'm losing weight. I'm like, yeah, because when you cut down too low, you're not going to lose weight, you know? Yeah. So it was just really nice to hear. Like, she came up with it on her own. She goes, oh my God, I can't believe this. I realized that if you eat, you lose weight. I'm like, ah, like,
yeah.
Spread the word. Like, you have to eat to lose weight.
Yeah.
But even working with people with, you know, helping with the diarrhea, you know, they're scared to leave the house because they're having diarrhea, they're having accidents. I mean, not to get graphic, but it's true, it happened. And they don't want to go anywhere. So their life is put on hold because they're scared. So when they start to change their diet and it is eating white bread, white rice, all these low fiber foods, and they realize, oh my God, my diarrhea is going away and I'm able now to live my life. It's, you know, it's a nice feeling to help them, you know, have a life and not be stuck in their house. So,
yeah. No, that's super, super impactful. And the first thing you mentioned too, regards to, eating more, it'll give you the energy also to exercise and continue that cycle. Mm-hmm. I went for a run the other day and, I hadn't run for a while, long story, but, it was long. It was like 15 kilometers. And I looked at how many calories I burned, and it was like in one run, I burnt like 1500 calories. And, you know, that is like, but you can't run that distance if you don't have fuel to begin with, right? If you're not eating properly, you're never going to get the energy to do that. And you won't have the opportunity to burn as many calories either. So it all kind of like connects. And ultimately what it seems like is you want to build this foundation, this ecosystem that works for your particular body. And for people to do that, if they don't have the answers, and I can't stress this enough, you need a coach if you don't have the answers. If you keep, look, if you get lucky and you buy a ticket and you win the lottery with your diet, then great. Or if you had really good genes or your parents taught you. But for the most part, people don't have that opportunity. So I always recommend to people, get a coach, get someone who's done the research. Don't reinvent the wheel. It's unnecessary. And anything else, you'd get a mentor, and anything else, you'd get an education. But for the most important thing, the thing that fuels your body, most people just wing it. And why is the question, right? So call up Stacey and give her some love.
Yeah, and it's also the point that we could buy so many nutrition books or self-help books, and we could read them, which is fine. We have the knowledge. Like, most of us know what to do. But it's going through with it and following through with it and being held accountable for it.
Yeah.
Just because it's hard to do things by yourself. It's easier. It's better to do it with others so you could all, you know, rah, rah, rah and cheer each other on versus doing it alone. And if no one else is watching, like, okay, let me just sneak that ice cream, or oh, let me just sneak that Reese's because no one's watching.
Yeah.
But if you have to write it down and give it into your dietitian and she's gonna see, you might think twice. Not that I would care that you ate it, because I'd be like, how was it? You know, if someone's watching, you're gonna behave better. Just like when you were a kid, when mom and dad are home, you act good, but when they're out and you have the house to yourself, you're gonna have a huge party.
Yeah, most definitely. Most definitely. You know, I what gets measured gets accomplished. That's what I was I always think about. If you keep track of it, then you know what's going on. If you wing it, the brain has many, many mechanisms to make you feel better, that you're never at fault for anything, but you got to take responsibility at some point. Stacey, it's been lovely chatting with you. I want people to check out more information about you. So I know you have a website, flavorfullifestyle.com. That's flavor, not O-U, that's flavor, V-O-R. So the American way, not the Canadian way.
American way.
You'd probably say the right way. And on Instagram, it's at cancer.nutrition.coach. And Stacey's great. If you check out her page, she puts out a ton of amazing content. It's super valuable for anyone just looking to take care of their bodies, or if you know someone or loved one who's, you know, maybe having a tough time and needs some extra help, call Stacey, get in touch with her. And you do a lot of Zoom consulting, I imagine, right?
Everything is Zoom now. I mean, COVID, awesome. Good and bad of COVID, but this was one of the good things that came out of COVID, having an online business.
So you can scale it, and anyone, no matter where they are, can contact you if they connect with you and want to learn more.
Yep.
Awesome, Stacey. Anything else you want to share before we wrap up?
Just one thing, like you were talking about, if you don't have a plan, you fail. So if you got a plan, you're going to most likely succeed. So you fail to plan, you plan to fail. So, and it's also great to have someone by your side and help you. And that's what I'm here for.
There you go. Well, cool. Stacy, thank you so much for coming on. We really appreciate it. It was a lovely conversation, and we'll look forward to having you again soon.
Yes. Thanks for having me.